it's funny. At the same time, Martin, I think, is afraid of robots.
Well, when we all get sold out to Skynet, we'll know who to blame.
Right?
When Skynet becomes self-aware, I'm going to be the first servant.
When the revolution comes,
I'm going to be the first servant, and I'm going to be living in luxury while you are not going to be living. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to arrange to remove you beforehand then. Anyway, for those of you joining us on that rather bizarre piece of banter, welcome to another episode of Writerings. I've lost track of what number one. It could be 9, it could be 10, it could be something even further down the line. I've just lost track of all time.
I think I'm going to number it 100 just for the heck of it, or 99.
Yeah, why
just
not?
Just to mess with people.
Age is just a number anyway.
Yeah.
Numbers are just a number as well, so who's counting?
Letters are just numbers and nothing makes sense anymore. Welcome to Writerings.
Yes, note. Absolutely.
Welcome to Writerings, the podcast where we occasionally talk about writing.
And sometimes robot overlords as well.
That's, some of us write science fiction sometimes. My name is Greg, I think, last I checked.
And I'm Martin, and tonight we have a very special guest with us, Jennifer Colvin.
Hello.
Say. Yep, indeed. That's you. That's your cue to say hello.
Hello.
I actually like your nickname on the Discord better, Seeker of Truths. That's... Can we call you Seeker from now on?
If you feel like it.
Yeah, right. then we start getting into trouble with BioWare over their whole Dragon Age thing. I don't know if anyone's familiar there, but might be treading on some toes.
Well, we are not making money off of it, so I think last I checked, do you get paid for this?
Well,
no. Right.
But if anybody out there does want to pay us for this, it would be appreciated.
Absolutely.
Just saying.
We are taking on the industry, and we are we look forward to the copyright infringement lawsuits as long as we get the monies.
Yeah. Gotta be worth it in the long run.
Anyway, we have a lovely guest, and we should let her speak.
Might be an idea.
Right?
Just saying.
So why don't we start with, the basics. Who are you?
Yes.
Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, my name is Jennifer. My degree is in journalism from Brockport, the State University of New York. I've been writing for as long as I can remember. I've always been a huge reader since elementary school. And I've always been very passionate about writing. I've always been writing mainly short stories when I was younger. I didn't get into writing longer works until college. I write mainly fantasy. Sorry, I'm nervous. I've never done this before.
That's cool. That's cool.
I don't know what to say.
We haven't either, so.
I was more organized in my head. In my head, I was like, oh, I'm going to say things and the words are going to come out right. And I'm like, no.
This entire operation was more organized in our heads as well. And then we started doing it. It's like,
It's like, who am I? I don't know who I am.
Yeah, I get that a lot as well.
Right?
There's that really great writing meme that, you know, two panels or whatever, it's like in the shower constructing beautiful sentences and rolling scenes and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then sit down and what are birds?
Or the other one,
I know that
is
meme.
The other one is, of course, when you're actually writing, you know, crafting beautiful lines of excellent descriptions and beautiful prose and the most amazing dialogue, and then when you're not writing, you just stumble over everything.
Right?
Indeed.
So,
yeah.
Yes, back on track. If you have a track.
Is there a track?
So, anyway, is there anything else, Greg, that you wanted to ask us the introductory stuff before we get down to
it? I'm looking at your Twitter bio, and I can see that you are an eclectic pagan and a vampire fan.
I am a huge vampire fan.
I know what a vampire is.
That's enough help. Even if you can't pronounce it properly.
What do you mean by eclectic pagan? What's wrong with vampire?
I mean, I'll shut up.
Pretty much means I believe in multiple gods, and I worship nature.
Okay.
Sounds cool.
Yes.
That kind of gives an explanation why you're writing fantasy and not science fiction. I'm guessing it's easier to put this kind of worldview into a fantasy setting as opposed to
definitely
spaceships. fairly low percentage of nature to be found in vacuum in space. I'm told.
Well, you're not wrong. Well, actually, it just so happens, I think it could be a tentative link, but that could actually be a sort of link into the kind of topics we wanted to talk to Jen about today.
Yeah.
Which would be, that'd be a nice-ish link to, Ben, you said on Twitter quite a lot that you write, what was the phrase, own voices?
Yes.
And you're part of that community. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what own voices actually is and why it means, what it means to you?
Right. So pretty much what Own Voices is when marginalized writers are writing in their own voice about characters of their marginalized communities. In my case, I am demisexual. That means I fall in the gray asexual spectrum, and I don't experience sexual attraction. Unless a emotional connection is formed first. So when I say own voices, in that case, I have main characters who are demisexual. And I also am Filipino-American. And I have main characters and side characters as well who are also Filipino-American. So I'm very passionate about own voices. I'm glad that non-marginalized writers are being more diverse, and I'm very appreciative of that. But I feel like own voices really captures more nuance. Really, you're able to talk about your experiences through your characters, and I feel like it gives you a lot more insight and a lot more depth than you would get from someone who's not of a marginalized community writing about marginalized
and
characters.
A lot more authenticity, I'd say.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for as well.
Awesome. Anything to offer, Greg? Anything you want to ask about that?
Yes, actually, because for one thing, I think this podcast is on record for supporting marginalized writers in any kind of community. What really fascinates me about this kind of approach to writing is, like Martin mentioned, you give a much higher level of on this that word that I can't pronounce right now.
Authenticity.
Thank you. At the same time, what do you think is like your primary audience? I'm guessing is. Or I presume is the community that you are from. How much do you think others outside this community can appreciate or even understand the kind of themes and the kind of subtext that you put in the work?
Well, I hope that it would make people more sensitive and more aware of our experiences. That is, like, I write, you know, to, for my communities. Like, I want Filipino Americans to feel represented, and I want, demisexual people to feel represented, and I want queer, just in general, the community to feel represented, because I have a lot of queer characters. But I think it's also important that non-marginalized communities have this opportunity to see from our perspective. And I feel like it'll make them hopefully more sensitive and more willing to work with us on certain issues.
Mm-hmm. And this might be kind of jumping the gun a little bit, but given the obviously you are in the US, so
yes.
It's even more emphasized and articulated there, but it's happening all over the world, there is an increased awareness and an increased spotlight on marginalized communities and all kinds of own voices, not just in writing but everywhere. Do you think or do you experience this kind of attention benefiting what you're doing, hindering what you're doing? What's the kind of the publishing landscape or the awareness landscape of the work that you're doing? So, like, are publishers more inclined to take on, or agents more inclined to take on people writing for very specific communities and subcultures? Or do you think it's kind of people are still trying to play it safe, and it's more like a word of mouth and a curiosity stemming from this attention? Or how did it change at all? Because I'm guessing you didn't start a year or two ago to immerse yourself with this purpose. So did it change at all of late?
I've seen it. I feel like we are getting more diverse writers, but I don't feel like there's still a lot more work to be done from what I've seen. I've seen a lot of marginalized writers talk about, like, there's already, we already have an Asian, you know what I mean? that type of reaction from publishing companies.
Checking boxes. Yeah, we have an Asian, we have a Latina, we have a XYZ.
Yeah, I from
there's still
from
a lot of barriers.
Absolutely. From a lot of the writers that I've followed and I interact with, I've seen as well that there's still a lot of certainly the more traditional publishing houses that they don't actively move away from these sort of stories, but they seem a lot more reluctant or quietly reluctant to actually take them on. And it's tragic, really, because having these sort of own voices stories out in the world, it not only is it great for the people that they're kind of aimed at from these marginalized communities to see themselves represented, it's also great for people who aren't part of those marginalized communities to actually see this see these sort of stories written from the point of view that they're written about. And it can be educational for them. They can actually learn things about those communities that they might not have learned another way.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, thank God. I thought I was just talking crap there for a minute.
Oh, no, you're spot on. Yeah.
On the other hand, there is the other part of the equation, is that because you're writing fiction, it's a great segue. Look at me, I'm doing great segues into the next kind of part that I wanted to ask about, is what's your process and how conscious are you about putting all these kind of perspectives and all these kind of at the end of the day, morals into your stories? Because when the reader encounters a book in a bookstore, is it better to kind of have this as a subtext and let them, you know, learn and discover, or put it front and center and market the book with, you know, you can learn about this and that, or you can be more aware of this and that, and how much is that diluted with the fact that it's fiction? So how do you separate, especially with a culture or with a sensibility that you are absolutely not familiar with, how do you separate fiction from actual things that are true? For me as a white guy, a lot of the sensibility is lost on me simply because I'm a white guy. How do I, you know, how do I know what to take away and what's real, what isn't? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Glad somebody does.
This is a hard question. Let me think.
Because it's like there's no, I don't think there's a right answer for this, and I don't think there is like a good way or a bad way of doing it. It's just I as a reader probably, like, I was I enjoyed Black Panther tremendously.
Oh, yes.
90% of that movie went straight over my head because I'm not part of that culture. I don't get those references. It was still a hell of a movie. But like, that's actually a great example. Black Panther is that it was so fused with the culture and the sensibility that it kind of shone through everything else, and I didn't need to think about that this is because of that, this is because of the other thing. It's just worked on every layer, and I could get the subtext from the main spectacle. It's just, it's interesting to me, how do you view, like, how do you approach something like this? And yeah, we can start with what's your writing process?
Which is a very,
you know, standard question.
Yeah.
But it's a gateway thing to kind of getting to other topics.
Okay. Well, my writing process is, I always start with characters first, because to me, the real heart of the story, the one thing that readers will always take away, is how they felt about these characters and their experiences. So I focus a lot on character-driven narratives. My process is, I handwrite first as well.
Love that. That helps me. Love that.
Get my thoughts out. So my first drafts are always handwritten.
Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, you are a millennial, can't write by hand, that doesn't mean everybody is, Martin.
No, the concept of writing an entire story by hand, just, it hurts my brain just thinking about it.
It does. What kind of person are you having to type it up after? No, it actually gets me thinking a lot more. Because I'll try and put down as much as I can handwritten first. But then I have to fill in the blanks and try to organize things as I'm typing it up.
Yeah, that double approach works really well, I found as well. So have you ever tried writing like digital handwriting?
Digital handwriting?
Digital, like writing on a tablet with a stylus or something.
I never tried that before.
It kind of collates the two together. I'm experimenting with it now because I too write longhand as much as I can. Because it's a very different creative process in your brain.
Yeah.
But I'm also lazy. So being able to, you know, write longhand and then just with two clicks convert it into text, that's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So, Stephen King said that he also writes longhand. Basically his first draft, he just kind of follows the flow, follows the idea, wherever it leads. And then he speaks about when he goes back and types it up and kind of reads through it, he discovers the bigger themes, the bigger topics, the arcs, and the subplots and all that stuff. So is that the same for you?
Yeah.
Hmm?
Definitely.
Okay. And so let's jump back to the kind of the being conscious about your own voice. Is that something that you have as a conscious concept in your head and you approach your manuscript with that in mind, or does it come, or does it born out of the characters who are already part of the same sensibility?
Yeah, I mean, always, it's not intentional, it's just something like I'm writing these characters, and based off of who I am, like, I'm queer, I'm also Filipino American, so I'll just end up having more queer characters because that's my life. It's really subconscious. including these characters. I just really want to see more people who are like me. You know what I mean? I really want more representation. Because when I was growing up, I'd never read anything with a Filipino main character. And if I read anything with a queer main character, it usually ended in tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wanted to have a
that's positive.
I don't know if anyone else is experiencing issues, but I keep hearing Jen just kind of drifting in and out.
Oh no!
I kind of get the like split second pauses. I think it's because the distance. So there is a lag between the European server that we are connecting to and the American one that she is.
Right.
So it's like, your fault, Greg. Move closer.
Yeah, well,
just scooch your desk a few, a couple of hundred miles west.
A couple of hundred miles.
Yeah.
You, my friend, are an
master of the understatement.
Yeah.
Just hop over the channel and we'll be fine.
Yeah, and I get deported when Brexit happens. That's going to be great.
Oh, come on. This is the British government. That's not going to happen for another 20 years. They'll never get off their asses and sort that out.
So getting back to Jen, before I segue into another section and get accused of...
Like you do all the time.
Yeah. Martin, anything to ask on the topic? You've been quiet.
Well, you said you wanted to talk more this time and,
Yeah, true enough. But, yeah. Finally, I get my chance to
talk. I thought I'd throw you a bone just to shut you up a bit more.
Yeah.
Let you talk just to shut you up. Yeah, I know. It's a bit of a paradox, but that's how we roll. Anyway, it's kind of a bit of a tangent, but it's still connected. So for people like me who are not ignorant, but don't always know what's going on, because we're daydreaming. No, it's not. We're just either too slow on the uptake, or we have children and don't know what's going on 98% of the time, or whatever. You used the term queer a lot, and that's been brought back into modern day everyday parlance, which is great. But what's the actual definition for it now? Because
that's a good question. Yeah.
When I was younger, obviously it was used as a slur, and I'm wondering if it's like the black community is taking back the N-word, as Marlon Wayans would put it, and basically turning it into something that's positive again. Is it something along those lines, or is it just does it actually have a specific?
It's a reclaimed word.
Cool.
But
I take every opportunity I can to try and find these things out, because the more I know, the less I'll cock up in conversation.
Or the more you can use in writing, because let's face it, we are writers. We are not overly good at conversations.
That too.
But that's actually a really good point, because especially nowadays, with the aforementioned... awareness or curiosity about all these different sensibilities, I find that while we are curious and we are more accepting and aware that people other than ourselves exist, we don't necessarily have the notion yet to be patient and be thorough, so we start throwing around words like queer and whatever else without knowing what that is. And I think it's tremendously important to get that vocabulary straightened out.
Yeah, and also it depends on the person as well. Mm-hmm. So make sure you ask, because for some, yes, it's still a slur and it's still hurtful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So it really depends on the person. I like using it, though. It's a lot easier to, because I would have to explain, because not as many people are familiar with what demisexual is. So it's a lot easier to say, yeah, I'm queer.
I'll admit demisexual is relatively new to me. I have asked someone about it before, but I still didn't really understand it much after that. But your definition of it made a lot more sense.
Okay, good. I try to explain it in a way that it's like, okay, I hope people are getting it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it made more sense to me, that's for sure.
Good.
But this whole conversation actually is a great segue. So, Martin, great job on that. I was going to ask, like, how do you put these, like, if you can articulate, which, you know, it's perfectly plausible and okay if you can. But I would think that one of the ways that you can kind of put all these sensibilities and perspectives into written form is through using the specific vocabulary used by these communities. And one of these is like, and as a narrator, explain what queer is or what demisexual is and all those kinds of things. So that's one of the tools. And feel free to expand on this, but I was wondering if you had any others that might be, you know, because again, for ignorant readers like myself, when I'm reading a book and I want to learn something, it helps me to recognize the tools so I can distill some information.
Okay. Yeah, what I always do when I'm writing is I try and make it as clear as possible what someone's sexual orientation is. Mm-hmm. That the reader, so that there's no, like, they can't ignore it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And also so that they understand, like, what it is.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Martin actually did that, if I'm permitted to speak about that, but
I did what now?
I was doing a feedback run on his work in progress adventure thing, and mm-hmm. And it was just like it wasn't like a centerpiece of the scene or whatever, but he was writing about a gay sailor. If I took away correctly the his husband line,
yes.
If I understand, yeah. So those kind of things, yeah. That's it doesn't like because a lot of criticism from really ignorant people, like violently ignorant people, is that you are trying to jam all these different things down our throats, and like the being clear about something is not the same as shoving it in our faces obnoxiously, obviously. Conversely, what are the kind of the bad ways to approach the own voices movement? Like, what are the things that hurt this movement or mission? Because I'm sure there are lots of people who kind of try to exploit this kind of awareness and curiosity and do a butcher job of to of writing about things that they don't understand and they didn't
experience. Yeah, that is a huge issue.
reader, it's like someone who doesn't know the writer and don't do research or whatever, one book is like the other. So how can they make sure that they are reading something authentic and reading something? What are the warning signs to put this book back on the shelf and, you know, don't try to judge the culture and the...
It's hard because you can't always tell. Like, someone might not be open about, like, their sexuality. So it's hard to judge. And you don't want to out someone. And no one should have to feel like they have to come out. But to support own voices where people are openly like, yes, we're doing this work. This is an own voices story, to make sure that you're supporting those books. I mean, I would hope that people who aren't of marginalized communities would be open about the fact that they're not marginalized and wouldn't be trying to use a marginalized main character to promote themselves. One thing I know that like really bothers me is when like a straight white guy, I'm sorry, is writing about lesbians, or like lesbian women of color, and I can tell when a straight man has written something and is being like insensitive.
I'm trying to decide if this is an attack or not.
No, it's not. It's just one thing that I noticed. I'm like, yeah, like straight guy wrote this.
Yeah, I mean, from some of the excerpts that other writers have shared on Twitter, there are certain times when you can just go, "Yep, straight white guy wrote that." Sometimes it's just glaringly obvious, and it is so painfully awful.
Oh yeah,
you want to burn your eyeballs. It's that bad.
Two things kind of popped into my head. Is one, it's kind of like reverse whitewashing. It's when someone tries to, you know, a white guy tries to write as a black lesbian.
Blackface. Yeah. Okay, I get what you're saying.
and the other is that I don't think there's anything bad with the white guy perspective. It's just we have to acknowledge that it's not the only thing, and it can be played on really nicely. I make this example a lot of times because I like his books, but Raymond E. Feist, who is obviously a white guy and of the older generation as well, so that's a double strike. And when he was writing the Empire trilogy, which the protagonist is a woman, and the teenage girl basically at the start of the whole story, so like he was like, okay, so I never was a teenage girl, so I'm going to collaborate with a woman. And arguably that the trilogy is the best thing he ever published, because it comes true that and they talk about it in interviews that they played off of things that because it's a story about a woman coming to power surrounded by men who kind of belittle her and don't take her seriously. And in their relationship, because he was able to write from a guy's perspective, and she was able to write from a woman's perspective. It worked out really well. So there's a use for it. There's value in it. It's just not the only thing.
And sensitivity readers, like if you're writing from a marginalized perspective, definitely invest in sensitivity readers, because they will like pick up on things that you know, someone who's not marginalized wouldn't pick up on.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just a matter of doing your due diligence if you want to write about, you know, diverse communities. You really need to make sure that you're being sensitive and that you're trying to be respectful. And not like fall back on stereotypes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And for the love of God, you know, we spend hours and days and weeks researching how to dispose of a body, and we can't research a community, a living, breathing community. Come on. That's just lazy.
Not an excuse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do the work.
Yeah. Although, if I can just add something there. Now, I don't know if this is broadly true, but it's something that I seem to have, it's just kind of, I've picked up on it. Whether it's something that anyone else acknowledges or not, I don't know. But obviously the LGBTIQA plus community is becoming more prominent. It's been around for centuries. Obviously everyone knows that, and you know, people are starting to learn more about it. But the problem for me, if you try and search, if you try and using searches and search engine, Google, whatever, for anything that's related to the gay male side of things, it probably would be pretty straightforward to find any kind of information. If you tried searching for gay female side of things, you somehow end up straight into porn.
Oh.
Because from what I've seen, from what I've understood, basically the whole lesbian side of things, it's become too sexualized somehow.
Yeah, with the male gaze. Yes, that's an issue.
Yeah.
It's an issue that bothers me a lot. A lot.
Yeah, and it bothers me as well, because obviously it shouldn't automatically revert to that.
Yeah.
You know, gay women, lesbians, they're people outside of their sexuality. All of these people of whatever sexuality they are people outside of and inside of their sexuality.
Yes.
It's not just about whose bits join with what other bits. It doesn't matter about that. We just want to know how to represent them.
Yes,
we just want to know some information. I don't want to try and search for this sort of thing and then wind up in God knows how many bloody porn channels. It's like, I don't need this.
And it's hard to explain to your wife too.
Yes.
But
no, honey, it's for research, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah,
sure. I'll be moving in with my mother.
Yeah. That's actually a great segue, because like,
you love your segues, don't you?
You make them. I'm just pointing them out. Is the actually the community and the way that we can change this so poor Martin doesn't end up on porn sites and subsequently the couch, the community. And like, in your Twitter bio, Jen, you use the hashtag on voices. Do I remember it? Yeah, own voices. So the one thing is that when the community and the information and the conversation reaches a critical mass, then you start finding actual valuable information and learn about these things, and you can find these. So let's talk about the community, and let's talk about how to participate in it, whether or not you are of that sensibility. Because just the same way that you travel to experience other cultures, you can participate in queer conversations and LGBTQIA plus conversations or what have you, because it exposes you to something different. So how to find these communities and you know, how to be, more importantly, because I'm guessing that a large part of our modest audience isn't part of this community. So how can we be respectful but still take part in it? And how can we be, you know, not make an ass of ourselves while trying to get exposed to something different than our own perspective?
Well, listen. That's the big thing. When you want to understand someone, you stop talking and you sit there and you listen, and it's really that simple.
Yeah.
And Japan has a lot of LGBT communities. You've just got to look for them. But again, you're an ally, so you want to make sure that you're listening, and that's the best way to be respectful, and also to be supportive. Like if you know someone, if you know a writer who's openly queer and they're doing own voices, or even, you know, like if they've just written something, anything, you want to make sure that you're supporting marginalized voices and marginalized writers.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And like, I was just thinking that I can't, you know, interpret the phrase "stop talking," but that's my own problem, I think.
Yeah, that's probably just the trauma from all the times I've been saying it to you.
Yeah.
But I don't know how true it is, Jen, but it seems to me that if people are wanting to learn more about those sort of communities and they're involved on Twitter, basically hashtag anything, because people who are in those communities, they will create a hashtag for their community and just search for it, and you'll find out all sorts of people and information on all sorts of things.
True enough. Like, not hashtag anything, because I just brought up hashtag anything and it's not what you think, but hashtag and the term anything that you want to search for. Did that pun come across? No, my humor is not that it used to be. No. Let me ask before, because Martin is about to point it out that we are approaching the 1 hour mark, which usually signals that we let our poor guest go and, you know, write better things than we ever will be. Let me ask about vampires, because you're a vampire fan.
I'm
Martin
a vampire
is
fan.
Writing about vampires. I enjoy vampires as much as the next guy, but in your particular case, is it connected to? Is it kind of a focus point or kind of a lens through which you can express the kind of sensibility and sensuality of? Because vampires, like, they can be a great vehicle for sexuality and those kind of topics. So is it connected to that, or are you just a fan, as it were?
Well, I'm a fan, but also I do agree that vampires are a good vehicle to explore sexuality. They're also, was it Anne Rice who said they're like the ultimate outsider? So
yeah.
As a marginalized writer, I don't know, I've always been really drawn to writing about vampires. It resonates with me. I guess because I've always felt like a bit of an outsider myself. The current novels that I've been working on, my cast are all, they're for the most part queer vampires. So.
This is great.
Vampires are cool.
Vampires are cool, except when they're sparkling.
Don't sparkle, okay. Don't worry.
Let's not have another 10-15 minute flaming session for Twilight, okay? We've already burnt it once in the last couple of weeks. Let's just let the embers cool first, okay?
Next
month.
Vampires are cool, and yeah, it's they are like it's not even fair how versatile vampires are. If you think about them, like they can be a stand-in for almost anything.
They could be not a stand-in for anything and just be really cool characters.
Yeah. I love
it. It's not about you, Greg.
Fine. Jennifer, where can we find your work?
I don't currently have anything published. I'm working on a series. I recently finished the second draft of my first book in October. And I started the sequel for NaNoWriMo. So I don't have anything published at this point. I do post frequently with the hashtags, the daily hashtags on Twitter. So you can, if you want to see what I'm writing, I do post like short pieces from my work in progresses.
And they are cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Jen's Twitter is Colvin _ Jen, but we will obviously put it in the show notes. How was your NaNoWriMo? Did you win it?
I wasn't trying to win. Because I handwrite first. So it's impossible to count my word count.
Another argument for digital handwriting. Because then you can actually like do a word count.
Right? I'm going to have to get into that.
Yeah. It's you know, this is not an ad. But if Apple wants to sponsor us, by all means. I have an iPad Pro and an Apple Pencil, and it's the closest thing you can get to writing with a fountain pen without actually writing with a fountain pen. It's
the other
awesome.
Option you've got, if the other option you've got, if you don't want to be a corporate shill, is you can handwrite before November.
That is true. I've done that before.
Okay, Martin, now that you thoroughly insulted me and my church, that is Apple.
We all have our crosses to bear, my friend.
Yeah, and mine's shaped like an apple, and it's awesome. It looks cool.
It's white.
Touché. It's silver and it sparkles. It's cool.
So it's a really bad vampire story then?
Yeah. Basically. Yeah.
You're not doing yourself any favors, Greg.
I know. I'm trying to give you the torch to either burn you with it or let you kind of do the outro. I keep digging myself deeper into a hole.
Yeah, so you keep digging, I'll do the outro.
Yeah.
Okay, that's been us for another week, possibly another 2 weeks, maybe another month, I don't know. Life happens sometimes, as it did last week. We apologize. Greg apologizes too, but he's too busy digging himself into a rut, so... enough babbling. If you do want to get in touch with us, or any of us, we greatly appreciate it. All of our Twitter links will be in the show notes. There is also the Writerings page itself, at Writerings. Imaginative, I know. You can also drop us a line via email, which is writerings.podcast@gmail.com. Drop us a voice message on Anchor. We'd love to hear from you guys. Give us suggestions, give us feedback, give us anything you like. Yeah. You can also rate us anywhere you can get your podcasts. And don't forget to share it with your friends if you really like it, or your enemies if you really don't like it. Either way, everybody wins. And I guess it just, I guess that's just, it just leaves us to say thank you very much, Jennifer, for coming on. Greatly appreciate having you here. It's fine. Thank you very much, everybody, and I'm sure we shall see you again next time.
Even though we will not see you, but talk to you, but you know, when I say hello to people on the podcast, I wait. I don't know why.
Yeah, I do that too.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. It's been a delight, and
it really has.
We would.
Thank you.
We are actually, and this is kind of a teaser, we don't know when this is going to happen or if it's going to happen in the way that we envisioned it originally. Anyway, we do try to set up some roundtable discussions around these kinds of topics. Talk to women, talk to marginalized people or people from marginalized cultures and communities, and we would love to invite you back at that point.
Oh, cool. Yes, I would love to.
So
sweet.
Because this is tremendously important, and not in the way as the media likes to present it. It's a lot of these communities struggle for their survival and or just, you know, acceptance or awareness, and it's critical that we try our best of our ignorant selves to understand.
The more we can do to alleviate the ignorance, the better, I think, is what Gerg is trying to say.
Yeah, from the whole, it sounds long because it's coming a long way. Anyway, thank
it
you
sounds
everyone
long, for you've got too many words in it.
Okay, bye.
Bye,
bye everybody. Thank you and good night.